On this week's show, Cooking with Contact with Scott Kaplan from Jerry's Kitchen. All right, Nathan Wood, we're back. It's good to be on the microphone. I'm feeling a little hungry this morning, though, huh?
I mean, a little bit. Snacking? I mean, no, I always snack.
No. I'm talking, you know, we got to be cooking with Contact here. So bring that hunger with you, man.
I totally did. Yeah. Lost track of which day it is. Of course. Yeah. We're here with not Jerry, but Scott from Jerry. Yeah. I'm going to screw that up at least twice today.
Yeah. So welcome Scott from Jerry's Kitchen. And when we screw that up, just know that Scott's here and Jerry's Kitchen a thing. And he probably is cool being both. Scott, what's up, man?
You can call me Jerry. Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, so just for a little context, Jerry was my grandfather, kind of my muse, my mentor, named the company after him. And, you know, just like hanging with him every day. Even he passed away several years ago, but, you know, his name lives on.
I love that. We're going to get into what Scott's doing here, how we met, how this all started. This is going to be a lot of fun. But before we do, you guys know this. Follow us on the socials, youtube.com/@thecontactcrew. Remember to connect with me on LinkedIn, Nathan on LinkedIn, but also don't forget The Contact Crew on LinkedIn, because those special shorts are coming out only over there sometimes. You never know. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring The Contact Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontactcrew.com to learn more. All right, we're back. So Scott kind of started talking about it. Jerry's Kitchen. I'm going to give the listeners just sort of a how did we get here thing real quick. So y'all know, work for Bluebeam. We did Unbound. Unbound attracted a large group of different people, and we had lots of different sessions going on. And in one of my sessions, Scott was there, and I saw the Jerry's Kitchen, and I'm just going like, this is interesting. Like, what does this mean? And I came up, started talking, and said, I'm just making connections, but you're bringing an interesting twist to the industry. And so we'll get into it, but he's basically high-end food service, food trucks, because we need to feed our workers different. And I don't know if it was just me, but the light bulb went off. Wait a minute. We've seen this in so many other industries. This is going to be interesting. But before we get there, Scott, give people your background a little bit and how you got to where you are today.
For sure. Yeah, I was one of those kids who really didn't know what they wanted to do when they grew up. So, you know, I graduated with a degree in corporate communications and spent most of my adult career in sales and business sales. But I developed a passion for cooking when I was 8. I remember like distinctly making my mom teaching me how to make omelets, you know, in the kitchen. And then I started cooking for my family. And I had a stage actually at a really fancy restaurant. I'm from Philly. So I had a stage. I was 16, you know, my parents were taking me back and forth to Philly. And at the end of this, you know, I'm just like chopping onions and, you know, doing grunt work and stuff like that. And I was like, I wanted to be a chef. And after the stage, I was like, nope, I am not interested in this. I'm going to be on my feet all day. So I was just like, everyone said, oh, you got a personality for sales. I was in sales. I loved it, but I got laid off. And a buddy of mine was like, hey, why don't you pursue your passion? Don't open a restaurant. You know, why don't you buy a food truck? See what happens. And like an idiot, I was like, sure. And, you know, like, I'll explain more of the story. But 10 years ago, it was me in a food truck and me trying to figure out how to make some money.
I mean, that's an awesome story that we hear a lot in the trades themselves and in construction. Like, you had it in you the whole time. You wanted to be a builder. You had the cooking, and we have a similar background that way. I did a lot of stints in kitchens. I did a lot of time working in there. I realized I didn't want to make it my career either. But and I think I learned more there than I have doing any of the education I got, any of the training I got. You learn from food service and even food prep. You know, Sean McGuire from the MCAA, who was in the room that day at Unbound and on the panel with me, we always talked about doing like a presentation on prefab and showing how a truly well-built kitchen is prefab. It's just hot food or cold food prefab, right? Everything has to come out at the same time, but it doesn't all have to be made right then and there, right? You don't chop the onions per order, right? The onions are chopped and they're backfilled. So there's a lot of similarities. I'm interested though. So 10 years ago, you take this over, you take the leap. It did not go the way you want it.
No, I was like, okay, we're going to do all of it. And I think the audience should know that you really have to not think of Jerry's Kitchen as a food truck. Whatever conceptions you have about what a food truck is, we're very different. And obviously we'll get into that. But yeah, so when I first, you know, started, I was like, okay, I went to Drexel, which is in West Philly. I said, and there was a great food truck presence there when I was there. I was like, okay, we're going to post up at the same spot. We'll feed the students and faculty, foot traffic. We'll do festivals, all the things that, you know, food trucks should be doing. And turns out that that was not going to feed my family. I had, at that point, I had three very young daughters who are all teenagers and in college and high school right now. But, you know, customers are fickle. You never know when someone's getting catered food inside. People go on vacation. You get a crappy festival promoter and they put you in the back corner and you know, and also we weren't a single concept. So a lot of people, you know, like food trucks because, oh man, you know, that's the taco truck. That's the crepe truck. That's the, but nobody knows what a Jerry's Kitchen is. So basically what happened was I was like, I cannot sustain this. You know, I typical, you know, founder's story, drained all the savings, the 401k, put it into the business because, you know, I had to maintain a level that, you know, I was had a really well-paying corporate job. So I went from that to nothing to, you know, investing in a business. And about 18 months in, I was like, this model is not working for me. What am I good at? I'm good at lead generation and I'm good at closing deals. And guess what? Catering with the food truck is extremely profitable because, and also predictable, right? So fixed amount of time, fixed menu, number of guests, all those things. So it's easier to control. So the next part of the story is me pivoting from cash sales to catering only with one food truck. And then from there, you know, this is a micro niche. And I think that that's where folks become successful in micro niche. You know, if you're out there and say, oh, yeah, we're a food truck, no one's going to know what, you know, what that means. Or we're a catering company, you know, okay, well, yeah. But food truck catering is pretty unique. And we started doing birthday parties and graduation parties, a lot of corporate events, employee recognition and stuff like that. And then, you know, the next leap was large scale catering. So that's why you kind of take the concept of food truck. Let's just say roach. If you have a roach coach in your mind, you got to get that out of there. So we started in film and TV, you know, and really, really doubling down on that mobile part of the business because we're literally catering in the middle of the woods a lot of time. You know, we cater feature films, you know, when we're on construction sites, you know, they're food deserts. It's acres of land that folks are on. So it's tough to get the food, you know, get folks to find the food. And that is what led us to us meeting and me wanting to connect with folks in the construction business. Because we started, as an amenity, a large construction company hired us that was working for, let's just say, a really big data center company, because they didn't want folks leaving the site. They wanted them to be more productive and say, hey, lunch is on us. You know, they take their break. They can get the full hour of their break without having to waste time driving around. And it's a win-win. So well, that's where we are.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, there's so much to unpack in that. I mean, the first one for me was how many contractors out there listening had a pivot moment like that, right? You were showing up, you're bidding every job you can get, and you're taking what you can get, and you're spread thin, and you can't, you know, mobilize for everything. And then you have to go like, all right, I've been chasing this for 2 years plus, and I got to figure out another place to go. What am I good at? Okay, well, I'm good at laboratory sciences. I'm going to go after that. I'm good at healthcare. I'm going to specialize, right? That specialization allows you an opportunity to grow. So again, I think there's just so many, you know, parallels that can grow. And I like that you said, what am I good at? Like, I love this food. I love the catering. I love, you know, providing it, but really personally, I'm good at sales and deals. All right. Well, lean on that to drive what you love here. So Nathan, I'm interested. What did you hear out of that? Cause you're new to this conversation.
Well, I mean, first, I'm definitely taking the term micro niche. I love that because that can be applied everywhere. I love that. But just this idea of, because I was trying to figure out the thread of like, all right, construction and then some of these other events like film. But this idea of remoteness or kind of like the challenge of getting good food to places that is typically hard to get to. I think, yeah, I mean, I love that because anything that starts with a big problem that I think anyone, you know, can agree with and that, you know, you're providing a solution to is ultimately going to be successful. And it is certainly a novel idea. I mean, I certainly, yeah, have not seen any other, or, you know, there are a lot of gourmet food trucks out there, not a lot that are catering towards construction and some of these other arenas that you are. So I love the concept. Yeah. Hopefully more folks are listening to this and can bring that in. Cause I think that whole idea of like who's buying, cause typically the Roach Coach model would be that everybody's walking up and they're paying themselves. So you're 100% a model within construction where an owner or a GC is bringing you on site. Like, yeah, help me understand that model of how that works.
Yeah. So, and again, I can't really say too much, but when we work, it's tradespeople, right, that we're feeding, and some admin folks, you know, that are in the trailers and stuff like that. But I want to kind of redirect because I think people are thinking, oh, one single food truck shows up and feeds some people at a construction site. One particular customer said, listen, we are going to have upwards of 1,500 people. And we're really kind of focusing on the data center space because that's where most of the construction is happening. That's where the dollars are. You know, I would say, hey, if you're building a school somewhere, probably not a great fit, but data centers are a great fit because they're large jobs. They need to be finished on time. They need the most productivity. So the challenge that was put before us was, how do we feed 1,500 people in 30 minutes, right? So they can have the rest of that 30 minutes as their actual break time. So don't think of us as just having a food truck there and they're coming to the window and ordering. That would be a line a mile long. So what we've done is we've taken that mobile concept and said, okay, we're going to bring mobile vehicles there. We're cooking on site with one vehicle. We are packaging on one site with another vehicle, and we are delivering with another vehicle, right? So people are standing in line, but they are getting their food within 5 minutes, right? It's all about efficiency. Because if you're thinking about one food truck and 1,000 people, that sounds like a disaster. But again, it's really not necessarily about food truck catering. It's really about a mobile catering solution, right? And it's the complexity. It's really simple. Hey, feed some people in a short amount of time. But there's not a lot of companies out there, whether it be a food truck company or a catering company, that can do it at scale, right? That's, I think, the game changer.
It's the game changer, and it's the shift in mindset, right? Like, this is what's so cool about it. You just did the shift in mindset that our industry is doing as well, right? We have to be able to deliver at scale. But I love calling you food truck because, you know, Roach Coach is where it came from, but now it's this niche, cool, like, I do go to my food truck for, like, hey, this is that taco truck that everybody loves. This is that poke bowl truck that everybody loves. So the quality of that food has gone up. But you're right, I would think, oh my gosh, 1,500 people. But what you've done is said, hey, if you can tell me how many people are on the job and how many I have to feed, and give me a good idea of the mix of the order, right? There'll be, you know, couple of proteins, a couple of veggie options and go, I can crush through it. And by the way, if you take out some of the variables, right? I know how many people are there. I know I'm going to be there. I know that they're all going to show up. It's not going to be, you know, maybe a rain delay gives you a problem, but other than that, it's not like they, you know, they're on vacation. Shit. It doesn't happen. And then you're not doing pay, are you?
No, nobody's paying.
So, by the way, slowest part of this whole thing is, you know, change and paying and dealing. It's just wheel, deal, grab what you need and go. And there's so much to that, because how much time do our tradespeople who are working, I mean, they are working on those data center jobs and others, they are working insane hours. So 30 minutes of rest in their hour break, 30 minutes to kind of come down, get their food, eat their food, and still have 30 minutes to rest could be the most valuable piece to that entire job site. And the quality of food. When you think Roach Coach, you know, I know, I remember on sites seeing those burrito trucks show up and wondering, like, what is going, like, oh, I don't know that I want to eat from there. This is high quality food that's fueling them too. We have to remember, we started this talk a long, long time ago about construction workers, tradespeople being athletes and treating them like athletes, treating their bodies like that. So it's cool to see all of that come to fruition.
Yeah. And I think the trick is, and you know, this really ties into the construction tech part of things, is that the planning of these projects has gotten so tight that we coordinate with folks because they know exactly how many people are going to be on site, and they can project the number of folks that are going to be there months, years in advance. So, you know, what we do is, you know, we take it a month. We have basically an outline, you know, kind of like a huge kind of bar graph of the entire project. And then every month, you know, they can tighten those numbers up. And that's how we know, because as you know, it starts with steel and then concrete. And then, you know, we get into, you know, the subs and all those things. So, the predictability is really what helps us the most. We're not just showing up and saying, man, I hope we can feed everybody. It's like, we know how many people we need to feed. And then we donate, you know, what, you know, sometimes weather does affect things. Sometimes, you know, something is behind or whatever, but then we donate the meals, you know? So there's a community perspective there as well.
Now you said the word as I was writing it down, predictability. And I think we were talking in the pre-call about this, of like the similarities or of the whole supply chain idea of restaurants and food service versus construction, in that if you don't have predictability, you can't have efficiency and you can't do things at scale. And so, yeah, like you just spat that the 1500 meals in 30 minutes. I mean, that's crazy numbers, but that can only be done when you know what to expect. You can't just do that on a whim, right?
Yeah, I think, I'm going to definitely misquote it, so I'll paraphrase. I think it was Anthony Bourdain that said that made a direct parallel between food service and construction. I have to look up the details, but like running a kitchen is like running a construction job. You got to have stuff prepped. You got to plan beforehand, right? You know what I mean? You have to be somewhat of a seer, a mind reader when it comes to a restaurant, because you don't know. You can base it on reservations. But again, we've taken that for my business. I said, I never want to have to guess again. You know what I mean? It's wasteful. It's just not good for my business. So it's that, hey, you know, we're feeding a fixed number. We can order for that number. We can prep for that number, and we can execute for that number. Right. So I guess that's where the parallel came from. So
yeah, well, yeah,
it's
Anthony Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain and David Chang does that. The Fukuda Chow founder. He totally believes in that exact same, you know, parallel. He's talked about it quite a bit, because most of them would love to know because then you get your food costs right. Right. You have enough on, you never run out. You never hear that, you know, if you're not in the industry and you don't know what 86 is, that means we're out of it. So 86 X, Y, and Z is actually, and it's funny because people who go to restaurants that don't know think, oh, they've 86, like they didn't plan. It's like, actually, no, that's why good barbecue joints in Texas and in St. Louis and others run out of things. They're actually doing it right. Because when they 86 and run out of everything, that means they've maximized what they're going to make and they know the profit they're going to make. When you've got that stuff left over, it's not a good situation. And it's great, though, to see that your circular economy, putting it back in where you have to, because those things do happen. So thinking through that, by the way, I think all of this, because you've relieved some of the things that restaurateurs have to think about, you can think about other things for people like that circular. I'm wondering if there's anything else through this process that have been ahas for you, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really on parallel with a lot of companies that we're working for. I mean, let's just assume, you know, it's the 10 or 20 biggest companies in the world. You know, they have ESG metrics that they're measuring, carbon footprint, employee retention is huge, right? And I think that we're trying as best we can. Now, are we measuring ESG metrics? We're not. You know what I mean? But, you know, when you think about, we're a national company, right? So we're essentially a construction parallel is, you know, we're the GC, right? We are, and then we have project managers working in each city. So there's job creation there, right? There's money coming into the economy. Now, obviously, data center providers and construction companies are bringing billions of dollars to that market, but we're also, you know, we're a great side effect of that, right? So employing, you know, 20 people at a job site that, you know, maybe just got laid off from a chain, you know, that's closing restaurants or something like that. The donations, honestly, that was the idea of our customer because, you know, they like the opportunity to tout that and to say, hey, this is how much we're contributing to the community. And then, you know, so job creation, and then like employee benefits, like these are nice contracts. These are nice meals. So we can pay our employees better, you know, than the standard, you know, waiter, waitress, GM, whatever the case may be. You know, it's funny because you and I were chatting when we first talked after the conference. You were like, duh, like companies like Google, there's a reason that they have a tailor there and a dog sitting business and a daycare, you know, because they want people to stay there. So, you know, we feel like we're on parallel kind of the thoughts and goals of our customers.
Yeah. Our first conversation, that's where we went. Scott was asking me, why do you think now is a big time for this? And I said, I think it has to do with your customers. If you think about those same customers, if you think about the progressions of their own technology companies, you heard about all the meals and the restaurants inside and the bike mechanics and the daycare. And it was all touted as perks by them, which they should have, right? They should tout it as a perk. But honestly, like the first one you were talking about was a major technology company who was losing half their staff every day to go down the street to a restaurant and wait in that line to get food. And they said, hey, we have an industrial kitchen and we can offer you everything you need and we could pay for it here. And they were like, oh, that's great, we can expand our business. And they were like, oh yeah, and that's great, we can get more productive people. Like, there's a reason you don't leave those places, you are more productive. But as much as that's funny for our tradespeople, that's a huge bonus because it does bring in that value that they have not been seen and valued that way. And I think this is an opportunity for those large technology companies that are leaning on our industry to build to say, no, you are some of the most valuable people. Yes, we want to feed you to keep you productive, but we want to give you benefits for that. It's such a cool parallel.
I mean, I would argue that the tech guys stole it from construction, right? I mean, because the Roach Coach was the original efficiency thing, but it was the model of you pay for your own stuff and get out of here kind of thing. And there are many tech companies where, again, they've all got their on-site restaurants, but some of those companies, they pay for all their employees' foods. Some of those companies, your pay deducts out of your paycheck. And so, you know, again, it comes back to culture too, I think. And I think that's really, Scott, what I think you're driving at is like you exclusively focus on those that want to take care of the people. I mean, it fits your model of having more predictable outcomes, but it also kind of fits this sort of larger ethos of how you want to take care of people and not just do these one-offs, see how many people show up, but, you know, be able to take care of everyone.
Yeah. And I think for a company like ours, and hey, can we have a conversation today without mentioning AI? You know what I mean?
Oh, we almost made it. We almost made it.
You know, in a world where, you know, jobs are being replaced with AI, having, you know, actual human beings being your customers and being part of your business is really, really a differentiate. You know, it's a massive benefit to food service when you're dealing with human beings, right? You have third-party websites where you can order and stuff like that, and that's not us, you know. And again, I'm not greedy. I hope there are other businesses that are kind of doing what we're doing, because that's where food service really needs to start paying attention. Is like, how do we get off of the apps? Let's just say, which are slicing margins to like 1-2%,
yeah.
And how do we focus on the actual human beings that are doing the things and needing, you know, nourishment, right? That's what it's about. It's not about ordering a cheesesteak to your family. It's really about nourishment for people that are actually doing hard work.
Yeah. And you hit on something that I think too, we've been talking about this consistently in sort of the undertones of a lot of the areas where you're going are, like you said, they're deep in the woods, right? They're off the grid, and the grid's being built out to them to build data centers, to build EV battery factories, to build, you know, advanced manufacturing. Those people are going to stay there in the end, right? They're construction people that originally go there, and then you're deploying to feed them. But ultimately, as those places open, there's secondary economies around it, and you're paying your people enough that you'll lose a few along the way who decide, hey, I'm in rural Kentucky and I never thought I'd like it, but this data center went up and this town's revitalized and I bought a big home. I can buy a big home for cheap. You know, the schools are revitalized because of these big corporations that are coming in. And by the way, you know, I introduced Scott and Jerry to my, you know, my special taco or my special thing. Everybody loved it. I'm going to go start a restaurant that's around, you know, hey, let's say there's a whole lot of Filipino people that work in this factory for whatever reason. I'm just picking it out because I saw a show on Filipino food last night. So it's just in my head. Hey, I'm going to open up I'm going to open up a Filipino restaurant here. Now I have a secondary economy, which, by the way, is the biggest indicator of success of a revitalization of an area, is not the primary economy. It's the secondary economy. It's you know, Scott work in the battery factory and his significant other have a restaurant, have a sewing shop, a tailor, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Cooking. I don't know.
Cookies.
I ran into someone. Yeah. Making cookies in their certified kitchen in their home. It's crazy. Let me actually share a wild story with you. You know, I really like to have my finger on the pulse of the data center industry and follow the projects as they kind of go through, you know, planning approval and, you know, all the things, because we all know that, you know, data centers can be somewhat controversial. They can have a great impact on an area, but there are concerns about energy. There are concerns about how it affects the community. And, you know, but on the positive side, and again, like, this blew my mind. I was talking to someone at the Chamber of Commerce, you know, one of these locations where a data center is going up. And they're like, because you got to remember, it's not just the tradespeople that are going to stay. It's folks that are going to be working in the data center. These are, you know, highly skilled on the other side, you know, with the computers, whatever, you know, I'm not a server guy, but, you know, and they said, you know, what's crazy is if this data center goes up, we don't actually have the people who live here to work in those data centers. So that changes the dynamic of things like education, bringing people to the area, to attracting them to the area. And that's where you see, okay, now you have a couple of hundred people working on this massive campus, and the city has changed for the better, right? And I never thought I would be talking about higher education as part of my job and even related to construction. But that's an amazing, amazing benefit of what's happening.
And they have a history to pull from there, right? We have a history. If you go look at oil and gas, that's exactly what happened in oil and gas. They could not bring the people there without investing large amounts of money in the infrastructure. I mean, I have been to some schools in Nowhere, Wyoming. I live in Colorado. I've traveled around. I've been to some schools in Nowhere, Wyoming that are more tricked out. I met a guy he's like, oh yeah, I'm the CISO, the chief information security officer for X school district. And I'm like, so it's you in an office with, like, you know, some antivirus? And he's like, oh no, you don't understand. Like, we have this huge system and we're like hooked up to Discovery's streaming system so our teachers can stream Discovery Channel things on the fly to back up their lesson plans, etc. I'm like, where do you think the oil and gas comes from, guys? And we had to have infrastructure for these folks. And so they have some of the greatest school systems and the economies are bolstered back up. So it's an amazing side effect to an areas that if you look, we're building those data centers and advanced manufacturing plants in places we used to do classic manufacturing and steel production and other things like that. And they were severely impacted. And I loved it. We almost got through this without saying AI. And it is a hype boom, but it is a real technology that will continue on and these data centers will be there for a very long time, which means the economies will.
Yeah. And it really is fulfilling just as a human being, because I'm that type of person that just to be a part of that, you know, to be a little speck of that concept.
That's awesome, man. I mean, that's why we brought you on. I mean, immediately I met you and I was like, I got to bring this guy on because more people have to know about this. Like they need to understand too, that you're in love with feeding these folks and nourishing them and getting what they need. And you've thought about it at scale. So, you know, tell people you're not just in one place right now. Like hit these people up with a little of that pitch for me. I don't usually have the people pitch, but I want you to pitch.
I appreciate it. Well, first of all, I mean, you can check out kind of like what our services are if you go to jerrys-kitchen/construction. If you go to our homepage, it'll be a fancy video and, you know, you'll see how we feed people. That's kind of like at a standard corporate event, but go to /construction. And, you know, it started with one contract and a big contract can be a game changer for a small business. And what that enabled me to do is, you know, I don't do really any profit taking. I really try and reinvest back in the business. And the lifeblood of any business, I don't care what you do, is business development, is sales. And, you know, that's why I'm sitting here in my office, not at a job site, because there are people that are much better than me at cooking and executing events, right? So we've become a national name in the construction business because we can deploy and deliver at scale. You're working in Topeka, Kansas. Topeka may be too big, actually. The middle of nowhere, Nebraska. There's a lot of stuff going up in rural Ohio and rural Georgia, you know, and you need that efficiency play, right? Because I don't know how many data center builders are there out there, really. They're, you know, you can count them on probably your fingers and toes, right? So we can come in, assess, you know, and get the commissary space. We fabricate our own vehicles, you know. So it's really turnkey, like, is just the easiest way to say it. But it's like, and also, if you're a project manager, if you're a construction company, if you're a hyperscaler, you want to be busy with catering? No. You want to be busy with servers and concrete and wiring and, you know, power generation. So I always say, let us take that off your plate. It's one less thing you have to think about. And by the way, that's making you more efficient as a project manager. You know, like someone just said, hey, take care of food for the site. And like the people I talk to or project managers are like, I was like, that probably wasn't in your job description, I'm betting. They're like, yeah. So the takeaway is national presence. We can go anywhere. We can tailor the menu. Listen, we all have imagine your friend group right now, right? And everyone in their friend group has the vegan, right?
Mm-hmm. We got a vegan. Everybody's got a vegan.
The gluten-free, the gluten-sensitive person, you know what I mean? Halal, you know? We want to be able to say yes to pretty much any question that gets thrown at us. And, you know, again, we just position ourselves as a one-stop shop to solve for food service on site.
It's so impressive. I mean, we're definitely have to have a whole other episode. And Scott, I don't know if you'd be the right person, but I feel like there's got to be some standards in there, because I'm a big, you know, standards and operating procedures, and like, you know, to get that kind of scalability in a remote place. I mean, those are like military type operations that, you know, we all know military food doesn't necessarily have the best reputation. So it's like, I got to know how you're doing this, right? And get into the weeds a little bit. And, you know, obviously not for this episode, but
I'll share all the secrets.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. Good.
So, and I want to take you back to that, because we all do have the vegetarian, the gluten-free, the allergy, and you said it, the halal. There is nothing like that makes someone feel heard and seen better than providing them the food that they need for their needs, right? That is a very human-centric, like, I've watched a lot of those people feel left out. And so to be inclusive, again, it's just a culture signal that we're inclusive, we're here, and I'm with you. I used to plan events all the time, and the biggest problem and the biggest complaint at every event I do is the food. It's always around the food. It's either, you know, not great, not enough, whatever.
The more people, the more complaints, right?
Yes. And so... Yeah. To take that, to know that I had a partner, that I don't care if I'm in rural Ohio, if I'm in Kentucky, if I'm in, you know, wherever, that I can say, hey, Scott, take this off my hands. And I'm sure you're building out the ability to survey those people ahead of time and scale with them. And, you know, I'd even hazard, I'm going to ask, if I was like that big hyperscaler and I came to you and said, Scott, this is what it's going to look like, can you give me sort of a cost plan so I can just build that into my bid and say, hey, this is what I'm going to bid out on food?
Yeah, that's what we do. And you know what? I'm actually happy giving all of the credit to our customers for recognizing those needs. It's really not about, we can make whatever type of food you want, but when we contract with our customers, we have, hey, there's going to be four selections, you know, whatever, protein, side, salad, you know, et cetera, dessert. And, you know, there's going to be one gluten-free option and there's going to be one vegan option every single day. I will not take any credit for that. They get the credit because, hey, it's not us working for them. It's the people that are eating that are working for them. So, yeah, I mean, and it's easy to model. It's really easy to model. Again, we're probably a rounding error when it comes to their budget. It's an affordable luxury and an affordable efficiency play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one, as we're looking through all the incentives to get people to show up and all the ways that we're trying to throw things at them, it's one of the ones that all of us can feel really, really good about, right? The boss can feel great about making sure they're all fed. You can feel great about being out there to feed them. And as an employee, again, food, and this is an Anthony Bourdain thing, food is a sacred thing amongst people. And to provide it at a level that they feel heard and are nourished, you're signaling something that I don't think you can underestimate. And I think that's a huge piece to this. So I hope most of our people listening search out and start thinking about this and you go find Jerry's Kitchen. Because, Scott, I'm glad you took the chance on coming up on a trades talk at Unbound to introduce yourself, man.
Well, it was great meeting you. And that was my, you know, when I go to conferences, I try and, like, my goal is, like, to come away with one great connection. There's 1,000 people at these things. You know what I mean? The goal isn't to get 5 contracts. The goal is to get one good conversation going. And I'm really thankful that you recognized this hyper niche, you know, this opportunity to chat with your listeners about.
Yeah, I like this micro niche. Nathan, it's been so much fun, man. Isn't this a different one? This is actual innovation in my mind. That's my AI. Well, I mean, Scott's actual innovation.
Yeah, I mean, I said before, but shout out to Bluebeam Unbound. I mean, yeah, just the way back to in-person events. I mean, yes, we can do this virtually, but only because of that in-person connection that happened, and not forgetting, yeah, the power of in-person connection in these events is they're powerful.
Yeah. Scott, thank you so much. Let people know, I think you said it already, and I'll make sure it's in the notes because you've got a jerrys-kitchen.com/construction. But if they want to connect anywhere else, anything they need to know, you're out there on all the socials and everywhere, aren't you?
Yeah. If you go to at Jerry's Kitchen on Instagram, Facebook, hit us up there. Again, you're going to see kind of like more of the standard like food truck catering, but hit us up there. You know, you get a sense of like our vibe. I think that's probably the most important thing, like what the brand is about. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Listen, I'll even give you my cell phone to give it to people because
careful.
If you call our company line, it goes right to voicemail and asks me for some information. But I really love connecting with people interpersonally. So
we'll have Scott's LinkedIn in there in the notes. Reach out and hit him. And I look forward to somewhere down the road, this having sparked us being able to do a contact crew on site while everybody's getting fed around us at Jerry's Kitchen. And we can actually interview the people about the food, et cetera, and just the vibe. Because, you know, construction's really lifeblood of the economy right now, and it's a cool place to be. And I love what you're bringing, man. So thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Scott Kaplan. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is The Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.